Hey friends, this is Scott. If you appreciate Hansel Minutes and the hard work that we put into this show every week, I would encourage you to support our sponsors. This week, GDPicture.net is sponsoring the show. GDPicture.net is an all-in-one SDK for WinForms, WPF, and web development. It supports more than 100 formats, and that includes PDF and Office OpenXML. GDPicture.net helps you create powerful document imaging, image processing, and document management apps. And you can download a free trial of GDPicture.net at www.gdpicture.com. Check them out, www.gdpicture.com. Again, if you support us, please support our sponsors. Hey friends, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Christine Spang. She's the co-founder and CTO of Nihilus and a very long-time Debian contributor. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I'm looking at your LinkedIn, and I'm just blown away. You've been doing Debian for now, what, 11 years?
Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting story. Debian's kind of, it was instrumental in like how I got into computing, actually, and how I decided that I wanted to be a software engineer. Mm-hmm. The story kind of goes a little bit before I actually started using Debian. So the reason that I ended up using Debian in the first place was when I was in high school, I got really into computer gaming. And I was really interested in trying to find like the games that had the fewest rules for like stories that you had to follow as possible, because I don't know, I guess I kind of wanted like to live in another world and kind of like explore, but I didn't want to have to like, you know, do exactly what the game creators told me to. So That eventually led me to playing these online games that were multiplayer games, and they were text-based, called MUDs. And how this ended up with me getting into Debian was, after playing one of these MUDs for a while, it was actually a Lord of the Rings themed MUD, I started actually helping out run it, because they had basically administrators that helped kind of run plots. And like, this MUD was very role-playing focused, so everyone had to spend a lot of time creating a character and writing their description and figuring out what their backstory was and their personality. And then the admins would have to like go through these and approve the characters before they went into the game, to make sure that it was, you know, a kind of rich in-theme world. So I eventually became one of these like role-playing administrators, and those people would like build areas of the world, and they would like run storylines in parts of the world and just kind of like make the world come alive. But if you were just a role-playing administrator, you were limited to kind of using the tools that existed in the game world to create new things. Whereas I kind of viewed that there were basically like two people on the administration team at this MUD that knew how to code. And I pretty much viewed them as having superpowers, because they could actually change how the game world worked and like create entirely new things that no one else had imagined before. So I really wanted to learn to program in order to be able to contribute to this game world in a way that I couldn't. So for one, the game's code base only ran on Linux, and so my uncle used Linux, and he ran Debian, and he got my twin brother into running Debian. So I had my twin brother help me install Debian on this, like, you know, those like tower computers that people had back in the day.
Was it like the white or the beige one, the big giant one?
Mine was actually kind of like dark gray, and I think it was from like CompUSA or one of those like big box stores that no longer exists anymore. So back in the day, it was kind of a feat to manage to install Debian alongside Windows and not accidentally brick your Windows installation. Because like the partition editor was like kind of like no guardrails in some ways.
Yeah, exactly.
So we were really excited to have managed to install Debian on this machine without bricking Windows, because I didn't know if I might still need it. I might need to like do my homework or something. You know, I was in high school at the time, so it was a little too risky to just kind of wholesale replace it.
Yeah. But you haven't needed Windows for 11 years, so you probably can delete that partition.
Yeah. In fact, on my latest laptop, every time I buy a new laptop these days, I just completely wipe it away. Though with this recent one, I kind of, a couple days after doing that, I considered whether maybe I should have kept it this time because, and I think it might be good to talk about a bit more about this later, but as the CTO at a company, I spent a lot more time talking to and working with people who like are not programmers. And I worry that maybe there's something that I might need Windows for to like, you know, deal with some obscure Microsoft tools or something. But I just borrow someone's laptop when that happens. So
yeah, that's a good system. The thing you didn't tell me though, is that this is when you're what, 14, 15, this is all happening?
Yeah, I was like 15, 16 at this time. Mm-hmm. So I installed Linux and I started trying to teach myself C because the MUD server was written in C. And C is really not the best language to learn as your first language. I would not recommend it because, you know, it's really a pretty low-level language. And I remember, so I bought the like classic C book, which is like the Kernighan and Ritchie K&R C book. And I remember reading it, and there's this chapter on pointers, and I'm pretty sure I read that chapter like three times because I just couldn't wrap my head around the idea of what a pointer was. And eventually, like after spending enough time with it, it sort of clicked. But I have very vivid memories of it being very difficult.
I have the same experience. That's just pointers. And then at some point it clicks and then it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes total sense. It's kind of mind blowing as like not having background with a lot when it comes to computing, just like having that be your intro and being like, what's a memory address? Whoa, this is pretty crazy.
I have a question, a sidebar question about this, because this is interesting. So you and I have very similar histories in that we were thinking about memory and pointers and instruction, you know, that level. This is what Maria on my team calls learning from the metal up. Mm-hmm. But she says, and she's a little bit younger than I am, that she learns from the glass of the monitor back, meaning she wants to go into the browser and hit F12. And at some point, she just accepts that the abstraction is the abstraction.
Yep.
And for her, maybe JavaScript is the metal, or maybe Go is the metal, or Python is the metal. Do you think that we come built in as a top-down or bottom-up learner?
That's a good question. To be honest,
Do you drive a stick shift? You know what I mean? That's what I'm kind of asking.
I don't drive a stick shift, but I do know how to drive a stick shift.
There you go. See, that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Change your own oil.
I never really thought of that before. I'm not really convinced that like either one of them is like the one true way.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who like knows how to low level program, but have like the utmost respect for high level programming because it's not less complicated. It's just complicated in different ways. So
yeah. Someone told me once that success is a pretty good metric. So if you don't know Assembler, but you launched Twitter, well, success is a pretty good metric. So.
Yep. I feel like in kind of like computing lore, there's this like, and just like the culture and what kind of we value, like there's this mythos in like kind of low level, like close to the machine programming. And I'm a little skeptical of it as like a measure of like how great a programmer you are.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's not about being a great programmer. Like, you know, everyone is different. It's more about what is the best way to effectively get computing information into a team, into a person. Mm-hmm. And the problem is everyone's a different kind of learner.
Yeah.
You know, audible learners, visual learners, people who read, kinesthetic learners, you know, not everyone wants to say, hey, let's talk about double pointers.
Yeah. I guess I would kind of agree that I like to kind of know the details and abstract from there rather than the other way around. Though it's definitely the case that sometimes when you're like learning a new thing, that's like a new programming language or a new framework, like at some point you're going to be in a situation where you almost have to like deal with the fact that you don't understand what's going on and like roll with it for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and then at some point you have to decide, okay, this car is not starting. Am I going to open the hood or am I going to hire someone to open the hood? Now you went to MIT after this and then went on and worked on kernel patching at K-Splice, which is basically doing Linux security fixes without rebooting. So what is that? Changing the engine on the car while it's driving on the freeway at speed.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
that's definitely opening the hood and then flipping the car over.
Yep. Yeah. At MIT, my favorite class was actually the operating systems class because it just kind of made me feel like a wizard. Like, to like actually access the low level hardware, and if you mess up, your entire computer can crash. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just thought it was the funnest thing to like, you know, inspect network packets like at the kind of packet level and kind of make them go and like think about the fact that like data is moving through the hardware of this machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's really exciting.
Hi, just jumping in for a quick word from one of our sponsors. Today's episode is sponsored by Dundas Data Visualization, the developers behind Dundas BI, the most flexible business intelligence and analytics platform in the world. Dundas BI allows you to easily connect to any data source. You can analyze your data and then share the results using world-class interactive visualizations. It's consistently rated by users as a top BI platform. Dundas BI is unique in that it is entirely open and extensible, so you can customize it to your exact needs. So if you're developing a web application and you want to enhance it with integrated analytics that your users will love, you can cut down your development time and boost your offering by easily embedding Dundas BI. Extreme flexibility, massive capabilities, and endless possibilities. Try it yourself. You can download a free trial today at dundas.com/BI. That's dundas.com/BI. Have you ever seen Julia Evans' So You Want to Be a Wizard Programmer zine?
I totally have. I know Julia and she's amazing.
She is amazing. And the way that way of presenting information is this is like a fun, cool, you know, you have power, you are empowered, you are in control. It's such a fun way to get people excited about computers.
Yeah. I mean, computing in general is just like kind of an incredible feat of human ingenuity, going from like this abstraction that's like high voltage and low voltage and somehow ending up with like these crazy information machines that now allow us to automate things and like aggregate large amounts of information.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention that it's all so broken and it still works.
Yeah, I agree with that, having been in computing for a while.
Yeah,
it's amazing that any of this stuff works.
Oh, yeah. And I'm on I'm on an Intel machine running Windows and I haven't rebooted in 24 days. And maybe you're on Debian on an AMD and you haven't rebooted in, I don't know, 20 years, however long.
I did actually log into my server the other day and realized that I was two major releases of Debian behind.
Uh-oh. Well, now you've, yeah.
And if you know Debian, you know they don't release very often. So it's like a stable release every 2 years. So apparently I hadn't updated that server in about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. So fast forward a little bit, and you've gone from MUDs to hot patching the kernel, and then you decide to start a company. And right now you're the CTO at Nylas, that's NYLAS.com. And CTO, that's like the C-level, that's the C, what do they call that, the C-suite?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of a big deal, right? That's you're like on the stock filings or whatever. That doesn't sound like the person who's patching the kernel. That sounds like a business person.
Yeah. CTO is interesting. I think it would be useful to kind of give a little backstory as to how I kind of ended up in this position.
Please.
So even before I started the company, so I was at this company, K-Splice, doing like kernel patching, and the founders of that company were some people that I met at MIT through the MIT Computer Club. And After about a year of being at that company, the founders sold the company to Oracle. So I was at Oracle for a little bit. And it was like through that experience that I pretty much came to the conclusion, this is my first time ever working for a really large company. And I didn't like it. And so I had been thinking about like what was going to be my next step during my time at Oracle, and ended up starting this company with a friend of mine from college. And in the beginning, the split between me and my co-founder, Michael, was pretty much that like the product idea was completely him. It was like based on something that he had worked on as like his undergraduate thesis. He'd basically been trying to build some stuff with email and was like, wow, this is really difficult to actually even access the data. Maybe this is why people haven't been building new innovative things that kind of work with this core technology that like everyone uses, but no one really loves. So he was always kind of the initial product visionary in terms of like what problem we were trying to solve. And I really joined as kind of the like implementation chops where, you know, I was doing like backend engineering, and, you know, at Caseplace, we had this huge VM farm because part of the way the technology worked was that every time you were like converting a source code patch to a binary patch, you actually had to compile the patch against every single old version of the kernel that you were trying to update, which was basically like every single kernel that had been released by every single Linux distro out there. And that meant there was basically like hundreds of builds that we had to do for every single patch we were updating. So we had this like pretty complex VM infrastructure that automated kind of parallel building of all of these kernels as fast as we could. And so it was a really different kind of product space for me to like switch to like working on email. But I came from like a backend engineering background, so it made a lot of sense for me to kind of start building out the sync engine that we use to sync data with email servers. And Michael pretty much like figured out like what was kind of the design of kind of the API, and worked with some other folks that were early on the team to do that. And I was focused on kind of like the lower level infrastructure and data storage, and figured out kind of how we were going to make it much easier for clients to be able to kind of sync, and brought all of our kind of first infrastructure up and stuff like that. So it was definitely super, super hands-on in the beginning. And we didn't really have titles at the early days of the company. You know, when you're, you know, like six people in like a tiny office and you're all just kind of working on building the product, it's not really useful. I think of titles as being mostly useful for like people outside of a company, actually. And once you get a company to a big enough size, it becomes useful internally because people like don't know everyone super well and they need to know what you do. And it was, I think it was about like 2 years into the company, like people on the team just actually just started referring to me as the CTO, which wasn't really something that I had pushed, but I just kind of rolled with it because I was kind of like acting as like the lead architect for kind of the back end. And the term CTO can mean a lot of different things, I've found. And like what that person does differs a lot from company to company. And it's not that weird for at a very small early stage startup for the CTO to actually be kind of like very, very highly technical and like doing some sort of like architectural work on the actual product. So I think it was an appropriate title for me at that point in the company. And since then, I feel like I've kind of grown more into the mantle of like what a CTO does at a larger company. And that has been actually like really good for me in terms of like growth. I still consider myself to be highly technical, and people on the team actually like still send me code reviews and stuff like that. So the company right now is, it's about 25 people, and about half of that is engineering. But my role has definitely changed a lot. I'm not like writing code all day every day, and I keep myself out of the critical path for kind of shipping new features or like doing major projects. And what I mean by critical path is that my work on a project should not be a blocker to shipping it.
Yeah. Sometimes we talk about the bus factor of a person. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
Right. Do you get, what if Christine gets hit by a bus?
Yeah.
Can we still ship?
Yeah. Even beyond the bus factor, like bus factor can be like, does more than one person know how this system even works?
Yeah.
And there were definitely points in the history of the company where it would have been really bad if something had happened to me, because there were things that like nobody else understood. And there were other people in the company that were experts on certain things that no one else really understood. And kind of as the person who's been there from the beginning and has kind of like been in charge of like the health of the back end, like I've been the one who has also, like when people have like come and gone, made sure that like we understood how the code that they wrote worked and that other people could work on it. Mm-hmm. But more so today than like being not like critical to shipping a project, I want to not be a blocker. And these days, kind of as the company has grown a lot, I have a lot more meetings in my calendar than I used to. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like these two different modes of operating. If you've ever heard of, I think Paul Graham wrote an essay about this. It's like maker mode and manager mode. Mm. Where like when you're in like maker mode, you need like long stretches of time so you can get in a flow when you're like working on building something.
Yep.
Whereas like manager mode is like, oh, I'm like kind of like pulling myself out of the details, and I might be like kind of monitoring how various different things are going. I'm like talking to lots of people. I'm communicating a lot. I might be meeting with external people who are not kind of actually employees at the company. And mm-hmm. it's kind of hard to switch back and forth between those two modes. And if you're trying to do that, it makes the like project work go slower. And so it's also, I find it's very enticing, and that if I let myself do too much technical work these days, I will neglect other things that are very important, and I won't respond to emails for a long time. And that's bad.
Are you concerned that you would lose your technical ability after so many years of being so technical?
I definitely think about that sometimes. Yeah. I'm kind of in this point where I would say that like most of my time on a week to week basis is not like writing code, but I still understand how all of our systems work. I kind of help guide architecture. I'm like talking one-on-one with the senior engineers on our team on a regular basis, helping kind of figure out what direction we want to go in. And I also am still a part of our rotation for like dealing with customer bugs. So that kind of allows me to get my fix of writing a little bit of code sometimes, and also just kind of stay in touch with like what are the things that go wrong and like what are our actual like customers experiencing. And so I'm able to like, you know, write patches that fix things for that. But I do find that like when I am the person who's in that rotation, one, it takes me like longer to ramp up than it used to. And also because there are some meetings that I like can't really like put off or like not go to during the week, I'm like not as effective as like a full-time engineer on that rotation. And it's something that like I'm keeping an eye on at this point. But for me, like I've always thought about my role at the company as like, what does the company need most from me right now? And what's kind of the highest leverage thing for me to be doing? And like as a founder at a company, you almost occupy a little bit of like a kind of like a spiritual symbolic role, where it was really important to me when we started the company to focus a lot on the culture, because doing a startup is one of the few chances that you get to actually kind of start from scratch when building how an organization works. And as a person who's been here from the beginning, I view it as my responsibility to kind of be the steward of that culture. And as the company gets bigger, there's like more work to be done with that. For example, we've been doing this thing where we have basically like every 6 months, we'll have a whole company offsite and talk about kind of like high level strategy and like our company's values and like the mission of what we're doing and trying to accomplish and going after. And Like for the last one, I spent a fair amount of time preparing beforehand. I used that as an opportunity to get feedback from the team about what we like and don't like. And we have an open source handbook that we've published on GitHub with kind of like our values and company policies. And it's like a way to communicate both internally to people who are joining the team and also to external people who might be wanting to know more about us, or even like other people who just like want to get a great like parental leave policy and just like copy it. Mm-hmm. And so kind of revising that and keeping it up to date is something that's really important to me, because as you add a lot of more people to a team, like they only know what you tell them about how the company operates and what they see. So like this communication of what's important to us is like vital to kind of keeping the culture going as the company grows.
You've kind of outlined the you've mentioned like lead developer, then chief architect or lead architect, and then CTO. And as you up level, I'm hearing you say, as you up level those things, you're going from being the smartest person in the room, or being the technical one, or being the kernel patcher, to being the big picture person, to being the bridge between the business and the technology, to being a culture setter for the technology division of your company.
Yeah, and there's a few more things to it too. Like, for mm-hmm. example, there was a point during the history of the company that I actually managed every person on the engineering team. And I had done a tiny little bit of management before at Oracle, though I only had two people who reported to me there. So it wasn't really kind of a full management load, but I at least got to practice a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I would say that kind of like listening and empathy is one of my strong points, and I really enjoyed having an opportunity to kind of exercise that ability. And I found management is also like, it's a different mode of operating. And I think that like, I would say that you have to think about it a little bit differently to find it satisfying. But I found over time that it has grown to be a thing that is exciting to me. So the thing that I find exciting about like building technology is like kind of figuring out all the details of like all the components and making something that works, that allows you to do something that you couldn't do before. And you can almost think about building an organization in kind of the same way, where you have slightly different components. The components are people, but more and more over time, I feel like I've developed this ability to get excited about accomplishing things like through other people rather than like doing everything myself. And it's also exciting to see like how much more you can get done by kind of harnessing other people and like creating like an organizational machine that is empowering and that makes it easy for people to like collaborate together and do great things. So it's definitely been a bit of a journey, but I'm excited about kind of the organizational side of things too. And I think that it's not like the natural path for everyone, but I feel like it's working for me, and that there's not really anyone else at the company who could like occupy this role in quite the same way. So I think it's really important for kind of me to stick to it.
How often do you have to posture a little bit and remind yourself, maybe if you're talking to an investor or a business person, like how often are they going to say, oh, she's the CTO? Like how often does that happen?
You know, I've never had anyone say that to my face or like...
Well, yeah, of course. I assume that it would never, hopefully it would not happen to your face.
Look actively like disconcerted, but I do think about... I'm kind of a little bit delighted about the fact that probably when I walk into the room, sometimes it's like a little bit, a little bit shocking to people, and they're like, "What?"
So you revel in that a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as like a female founder and also like female like CTO at a company, there's a certain extent as to which just existing is like changing the status quo a bit, and kind of like making tech more inclusive is also really important to me. And I've definitely been in places where I've like beat myself up a little bit because I feel like I'm not doing enough, but I just have to kind of remind myself over time that like just existing and like succeeding in this role is contributing in a way.
I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, you can talk about what you're doing and you can spend all of your time doing that, or you can do the thing you're doing.
Yeah.
And simply by being visible and by kicking butt,
yep,
people will see that. And people can go up to nylas.com, N-Y-L-A-S. And I was able to go just scroll down a little bit where it says developers first, because I'm a developer. And I was able to try a live example of how the API works in my terminal, run curl, and look at messages just right there with curl or HTTP IE or wget. It's pretty slick.
Yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
For sure. It's been really great. I really enjoyed getting to know you a bit, Scott, and having this conversation.
Cool. We appreciate you. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.